right, let's dive into a case that sounds like something you'd see in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
But it has some pretty big legal consequences.
Definitely.
We're talking about Stern v. Marshall.
Yeah, it's a case that mixes a big inheritance fight
yeah.
with some really basic questions about the power of bankruptcy courts.
Exactly. So we've got Anna Nicole Smith.
Right.
Also known as Vicki Lynn Marshall.
Yep.
She married billionaire J. Howard Marshall II back in 1994.
Uh-huh.
He died just a year later.
Oh, wow.
And that's when things get interesting.
Oh, I bet.
So we've got this classic inheritance battle brewing.
Right.
Vicki Lynn's fighting with Pierce Marshall, who's J. Howard's son.
Over the estate.
Over this massive estate. Exactly.
Makes sense.
But then here's the twist.
Okay.
Vicki Lynn files for bankruptcy in California.
Hmm. Interesting.
You'd think that's a completely separate thing.
You would think so, yeah.
But here's where it gets wild.
What heck?
Pierce, who's already in this inheritance fight, decides to file a defamation claim against Vicki Lynn.
No kidding.
And he does it right inside the bankruptcy case.
Oh, wow.
So now this whole inheritance mess is playing out in bankruptcy court.
That complicates things.
And of course, Vicki Lynn countersues.
I figured she would.
Saying Pierce interfered with an inheritance she was expecting from her late husband.
Oh, this is a real legal showdown.
Absolutely. Now,
go on.
To make it even more interesting, the bankruptcy court actually sides with Vicki Lynn.
Really?
Awards her damages and everything.
Wow, so what happened next?
Well, as with most legal battles, it goes to appeals.
Oh, right.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals takes a look at it.
Uh-huh.
And they overturn the bankruptcy court's decision.
Hmm, I see.
So suddenly, this case that seemed kind of isolated
right.
is headed to the biggest court in the country.
The Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court. You got it.
Wow. And that's where the real constitutional questions come into play.
That's right. Because now the justices have to figure out, what are the limits of the bankruptcy court's power?
Right.
Can a bankruptcy court, which isn't a regular Article III court,
yeah.
issue a final ruling on a state law dispute like Vicki Lynn's counterclaim?
That's a tough one.
Yeah. So for those of us who aren't legal experts,
right.
can you break down what makes an Article III court so special?
Sure. So it all goes back to the Constitution.
Okay.
Article III basically sets up our federal court system.
Okay.
It establishes lifetime appointments for federal judges.
Uh-huh.
Guaranteeing their independence.
From political pressure.
Yeah, from political pressures.
Got it.
And that independence is super important.
To make sure judgments are fair.
Exactly, especially when it comes to basic rights.
So bankruptcy courts are a little different.
Yeah, they are.
They're specialized courts.
Right.
Created by Congress, not directly by the Constitution.
That's right.
Specifically to handle bankruptcy cases efficiently.
Uh-huh.
But they're part of the federal judiciary.
They are.
Just don't have the same level of independence.
Right.
Or authority as those Article III courts.
That's right.
So how does Vicki Lynn's case fit into all of this?
Good question.
I mean, her counterclaim against Pierce
yeah.
wasn't about bankruptcy law at all.
Nope.
It was based on state law.
Exactly.
So how did the Supreme Court deal with that?
Well, that was the big question, right?
Yeah.
The Supreme Court had to analyze whether this whole dispute fell under something called the public rights exception.
Okay, another legal term to explain.
Yeah.
What's the public rights exception all about?
Basically, it's this legal idea
okay.
that carves out certain types of cases
uh-huh.
that non-Article III courts can handle.
Like bankruptcy courts.
Exactly. Like bankruptcy courts.
Okay.
These are cases that are really closely tied to bankruptcy proceedings.
Got it.
Or involve what are considered public rights.
Like what?
Often things involving the government in some way.
Okay. So things like tax disputes
yeah.
or claims against a federal agency.
Right.
They get handled in specialized courts
yeah.
because they're so unique.
Yeah.
And require specific expertise.
Precisely.
But the big issue in Stern v. Marshall
yeah.
was whether Vicki Lynn's counterclaim, which was based on state law,
right.
could sit into that public rights category,
uh-huh.
or if it was really a private dispute,
right.
that should have gone to a regular Article III court.
Exactly. That was the key question.
So what did the Supreme Court decide?
Well, it was a close one, a 5-4 decision.
Oh, wow.
The majority opinion, written by Chief Justice Roberts,
uh-huh.
sided with the Ninth Circuit.
Okay.
They said this wasn't a public right issue at all.
Interesting.
Even though Congress had given bankruptcy courts the power to handle these kinds of disputes,
wow.
the Constitution, according to the majority, was more important than that statutory authority.
So they basically said the bankruptcy court overstepped its boundaries.
Exactly.
By issuing a final ruling on Vicki Lynn's counterclaim.
They did.
So does that mean Pierce won?
Well, not so fast.
Okay.
The Supreme Court didn't actually say Pierce was right on the merits of his case.
Mm-hmm.
They just said the bankruptcy court didn't have the power to make the final decision.
Ah, so it wasn't about who deserved the inheritance. Man. It was about which court had the authority to decide.
Exactly.
This is where it gets really interesting because there's a dissenting opinion in this case.
Oh, there is.
Justice Breyer really brought the heat.
Okay, what did he say?
So we left off talking about this clash between the Constitution and practicality.
Yeah, in Stern v. Marshall.
Right, before we get into what happened after the decision.
Okay.
Let's go back to Justice Breyer's dissent for a second.
Sure.
What were his strongest arguments?
Well, one of his main points was about consent.
Okay.
He argued that when Pierce Marshall filed his claim in bankruptcy court,
yeah,
he basically agreed to let that court handle it.
Even though it wasn't technically an Article III court.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like saying you'll play a game by a certain set of rules.
Right.
And then you can't just change the rules in the middle of the game because you're not winning.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Breyer also pointed out the chaos that could happen.
Oh, yeah.
If people could just jump between bankruptcy and district court.
Right. Depending on which one seems better at the time.
Exactly. It'd be a mess.
Total confusion.
So Breyer's arguing that letting bankruptcy courts resolve these state law claims,
even if they can't make the final decision,
right,
would make things so much smoother.
And less expensive for everyone.
Absolutely.
So it's a more practical approach.
It is.
Keep things moving in one court.
Exactly.
But the majority, even though they acknowledged Breyer's point,
yeah,
still said the Constitution comes first.
Right. They were worried about giving bankruptcy courts too much power.
And undermining Article III.
Exactly.
So it's about finding that balance.
It is, between efficiency and the Constitution.
And that's what makes Stern v. Marshall so important.
It really is.
It makes us think about the structure of our court system.
And how it all works together.
So how did things actually change after this decision?
Well, the biggest change was a new distinction between core proceedings and Stern claims.
All right, break that down for us.
Okay, so core proceedings are things that are directly related to bankruptcy law.
Like what?
Determining if a bankruptcy petition is valid.
Okay.
Approving the sale of assets.
Okay.
Confirming a repayment plan.
Uh-huh.
Or handling claims from creditors.
So the basic things you'd expect a bankruptcy court to handle.
Exactly.
Then you've got these Stern claims.
Right.
Which are basically state law claims.
Yeah.
That the Supreme Court said bankruptcy courts can't issue a final judgment on.
That's right.
So let's say you're in bankruptcy court.
Okay.
And you have a dispute with a contractor who didn't finish some work.
Right.
That's a state law contract issue, right?
It is.
So under Stern v. Marshall, that would be a Stern claim.
Because it doesn't come directly from bankruptcy law.
So what happens to those Stern claims?
Well, they don't just disappear.
Okay.
The bankruptcy court can still hear the case and even suggest a ruling.
Okay.
But the district court judge makes the final decision.
So it adds another step to the process.
And potentially more time and money for everyone involved.
Exactly. So if you're a bankruptcy lawyer.
Right.
And you suddenly have a Stern claim, you have to change your strategy.
Well, sure.
You might have to try and resolve it in district court right away.
Right.
Or go through this two-step process.
Where the bankruptcy court gives a recommendation.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to district court for the final ruling.
That sounds like a tough decision.
It can be.
You have to weigh the pros and cons.
Exactly.
Of staying in bankruptcy court.
Right. Maybe for efficiency or strategy.
Versus the risk of having to go to district court later.
That's exactly why Stern v. Marshall was such a big deal.
It changed the game for bankruptcy law.
It did.
So even though Stern v. Marshall limited what bankruptcy courts can do, it didn't completely shut them out of these Stern claim situations.
No, they can still hear the cases, give recommendations,
and be part of the process.
Exactly.
And there's another case that clarified this even more.
Oh, yeah.
Executive Benefits Insurance Agency v. Arkeson.
Right.
It gave more guidance on how to handle Stern claims.
I see. So how did Executive Benefits build on what the Supreme Court did in Stern v. Marshall?
Well, in Executive Benefits,
mm-hmm.
the Supreme Court had a slightly different situation.
Okay.
It involved a fraudulent transfer claim.
All right.
It was filed in bankruptcy court.
Uh-huh.
But it ended up being a Stern claim.
Because it came from state law.
Exactly. Another example of a state law issue popping up in a bankruptcy case.
Yeah.
But the bankruptcy court couldn't make the final decision.
Right.
So the big question in Executive Benefits was whether the bankruptcy court could still give a report and recommendation.
To the district court.
Yeah, even though it couldn't make the final call itself.
Yeah. So basically laying out the issues and suggesting a ruling.
Exactly.
What did they decide?
The Supreme Court said yes.
Yeah.
Bankruptcy courts could keep doing this.
Even in stern claim cases.
They can still conduct proceedings, gather evidence,
yeah,
and give their legal analysis to the district court.
So it was a kind of compromise?
Yeah, it recognizes the expertise of bankruptcy courts,
uh-huh,
while still respecting those Article III boundaries from Stern v. Marshall. And the court went even further.
Huh.
They emphasized how important it is,
yeah,
for bankruptcy and district court judges to work together in these cases.
That makes sense.
It shouldn't just be a one-way street.
Right.
The district court judge should really consider what the bankruptcy court found. So it's a team effort.
It is.
Even though the bankruptcy judge doesn't have the final say.
That makes a lot of sense. You wouldn't want to waste their expertise.
Exactly. And that's the main takeaway from executive benefits.
What is it?
It created a roadmap for how to handle stern claims in a way that balances efficiency and the Constitution.
It's a tough balance to strike.
It's not perfect, but it's an attempt.
Yeah, it's fascinating how a case with Anna Nicole Smith,
I know, right,
ended up changing bankruptcy law so much.
It really shows how connected our legal system is.
It does.
One decision can have a ripple effect everywhere.
It's important for lawyers to understand constitutional principles.
Absolutely.
And how they affect their work.
No matter what area of law they're in.
That's right.
It's not just about knowing the specific rules. It's about understanding the big picture.
Those basic concepts that the whole system is built on.
Exactly. And Stern v. Marshall is a great example
of how the Supreme Court deals with these tough questions.
Trying to balance being practical with upholding the Constitution.
It's a tough job.
So what are the main takeaways for our listeners?
Well, beyond bankruptcy law.
Yeah.
This case should make us think about the balance between efficiency and constitutional safeguards.
In all of our courts.
Yeah, it's a question that comes up all the time.
It's that classic tension between getting things done,
right,
and sticking to our principles.
We want a system that's efficient and easy to use.
Yeah.
But we also need to make sure people's rights are protected.
And that courts are operating within their limits.
It's a debate that's still going on.
As courts try to figure out the boundaries of these specialized tribunals.
Like bankruptcy courts, administrative courts,
yeah,
and other specialized bodies.
They're important.
They are.
But we're still figuring out their powers and limitations.
It's something to think about for anyone interested in law.
Whether you're a lawyer or just starting out.
This case shows that the law is always changing.
And sometimes it takes a bit of drama.
And a clash of principles.
To really highlight those complexities.
Or make us have these important conversations.
You know what's really striking about Stern v. Marshall?
What's that?
This whole thing started with a pretty unique situation.
Uh-huh.
A celebrity inheritance battle.
Yeah.
But it ended up impacting the entire bankruptcy system.
It really did.
It just shows how interconnected everything is in law.
That's true.
One decision can have these ripple effects everywhere.
It's like a chain reaction.
Yeah, exactly.
And for lawyers, it's a reminder that constitutional principles are important.
Absolutely.
No matter what area of law you're in.
You need to understand those big concepts.
The foundation of the whole legal system.
Exactly. And Stern v. Marshall shows how the Supreme Court handles those issues.
Trying to find a balance between efficiency and the Constitution.
It's not easy.
No, it's not.
But for our listeners, what are the key takeaways?
Well, beyond bankruptcy law.
Yeah.
This case should make us ask some bigger questions.
Like what?
What's the right balance between efficiency and constitutional safeguards in our courts?
It's a question that comes up everywhere.
In all areas of law, not just bankruptcy.
We want a system that works well.
Right. It should be easy to use and efficient.
But we also need to protect people's rights.
And make sure courts are staying within their limits.
It's a tough balancing act.
It is.
And it's a debate that's still going on.
As courts figure out how to deal with specialized tribunals,
like bankruptcy courts.
Administrative courts.
Yeah.
All sorts of specialized bodies.
It's a reminder that the law is always changing.
And evolving.
And sometimes it takes these dramatic cases.
With clashes of principles.
To really highlight those complexities.
And make us think critically about the system.
Well said. Stern v. Marshall is more than just a celebrity case.
It is.
About the structure of our courts.
The importance of the Constitution.
And finding that balance between efficiency and fairness.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Stern v. Marshall.
Thanks for joining us on this legal adventure.
It's been my pleasure.
And remember, sometimes the most interesting legal cases are the ones that make us question our assumptions and explore those big ideas that shape our world.